from ABC News Radio, KMET 1490 in Southern California. This is Biz Ninja Entrepreneur Radio with your host, Tyler Jorgensen.
Welcome out to another wonderful episode of the Biz Ninja Entrepreneur Radio Show. I am your host, Tyler Jorgensen, and today I have the pleasure of interviewing Sangeeta Bottle, who is the principal scientist for the Gallup Builder Organization. Welcome out to the show.
Thank you so much, Tyler. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, before we dive into this amazing book that you and Jim Clifton wrote called Born to Build, maybe help the listeners understand a little bit about what Gallup is. The very first time I ever heard of Gallup was I had to take one of the few jobs I'd had in my career where I worked for somebody else. I had to take a Gallup survey and a personality type of test. Can you kind of give the listeners a bird's eye view of what Gallup is, and then maybe dive into what the Builder Initiative is?
Absolutely. So you're absolutely right. I think Gallup is really well known for its polling activity. So whether it's a political poll or surveying social, economic, political issues, that's what the brand is known for. And globally known for. We also, though, are really big into analytics and advice about organizational issues, which is to say that we work with Fortune 500 companies, helping leaders and their organizations solve their most pressing problems, whether they are about engaging employees, about understanding how to make sense of their data, which is all the analytics piece, or it is about helping them find their best employees, so hiring and selection and development of that talent. We also are very, very strong on developing human potential in any capacity, in any setting, whether they are employees for an organization, whether they are entrepreneurs, students who are thinking about their next steps in life. So there's a wide range of analytics and advice services that Gallup also provides.
So Gallup, for the entrepreneur, somebody who understands maybe the analytics of traffic and websites, Gallup uses macro data to help cut through the personal opinions and the biases, right, and give actual statistically significant data that employers and people can take action on to try to create actionable and improvement within their company, right? Is that kind of a shorthand version?
Yes, that's awesome. Absolutely right.
And so what I think is really cool is that you work in this fantastic, you're the principal scientist for the Builder Initiative. And when I look at your book and the subtitle, How to Build a Thriving Startup, a Winning Team, New Customers, and Your Best Life Imaginable, it seems like you took four things that most entrepreneurs assume have to be in conflict with each other and say that it's actually possible to have all of it. So how is, but what I love about you guys is that you use data for everything. You don't just have opinions, right? So what, is this possible, first of all? Can people actually have a thriving startup, a winning team, excited new customers, and still have a great life? Is that possible?
I think it's absolutely possible. And this book talks about the process of that. It also breaks it down into easier steps so people can, irrespective of what stage of their career or the process of building they are in, they can gain something out of it. So we brought together a couple of different things here in this book. Of course, have the psychological aspects. We talk about how important talent is, the individual's talent, to really develop that, to become self-aware, and then to use it to develop the business and to get the outcomes you want. And then we marry that talent perspective with what is that process of building that would really lead to success and build a sustainable business. The book talks about early stage building, not so much scaling. And then we bring in the way to build a team so that you can have people who can take that venture to a sustainable level and then can think about how to scale that down the line. So we are trying to inspire ambitious, self-motivated people to build something. And one thing about this book is that even though our focus definitely is on the startup activity, but the principles in the book could be applied to a nonprofit situation, to a corporate environment where someone is trying to build, for instance, a new division, anything that creates economic energy. So we offer a very uniquely psychological approach to venture building. And what I mean by that is that we help the readers understand who they are. That's where we start. Let's start with what talents you have, and then knowing who you are, what is it that you should build? And then let's get into the process of how to build it. So there are tools and techniques.
Okay, yeah. So you're talking about self-awareness and really making sure that everyone understands, you know, what their capabilities are, what their and what basically what their talents are. Is that the direction we're going?
That's right.
And
what are their capabilities? I'm sorry, say that last part again.
You were saying that, you know, around that, there's a couple of things that you guys do.
Right. So, when we started looking at entrepreneurial activity as a means to generate economic growth, we found that only about 4 in 10,000 startups go on to become large enterprises of about 100 million or more. Over 40% actually don't even make it past their third year. And it's a minority that creates majority of the new jobs we keep hearing about. So about 5% of the startups actually end up creating 50% of the new jobs. And that indicates a pretty high degree of skewness in the distribution of job creation. So the question then is, what separates businesses that thrive from others that fail or stall after they're launched? And most of the focus, of course, as I'm sure you've heard, is either on organizational challenges, causes, for instance, like location, unfriendly business policies, lack of financing. All these factors are affecting the business to not survive or to not thrive. And of course, over the years, we've defined new methodologies. You know, Lean method is a great example, which is based on the agile engineering process. You have a customer development methodology propagated by Steve Blank. We formalized the business model on a single piece of paper. So, you know, we've tried to make strides in terms of helping businesses survive and helping businesses be sustainable. However, our survival stats or even the startup activity is not really showing signs of improvement. I mean, we have been declining in terms of the number of startups that have been forming in the United States for the past about four decades now. And here is, I think, an issue that we usually overlook. All these approaches are excellent in their concept, but are missing an important piece of the puzzle. And that is that we never account for the individual differences of the founders or the builders. So to your question of when you say talent, what exactly does that mean? What we mean by that is that the person who's at the center of this activity, the person who's making or a small team that's making all the decisions that can either help the venture or failed the venture, we never really account for what is it that the individual is like and what does he or she bring to the table. You know, for instance, someone who's not relationship oriented, you cannot teach that person to build relationships. Someone who is less likely to be creative, you can't teach someone to innovate or to create new products and services. Someone who is risk averse, you can't expect that person to overnight become risk taker. So what we need to do is we need to identify what is it that the person has. So someone who's creative, someone who's a risk taker, someone who another person might be more relationship oriented. Let's help that person utilize what he or she has to the fullest maximum potential. And then for the things that don't come that naturally to that person, let's have a team member, let's have a high sales talent, for instance, next to the person who's creative, so that someone can take that creative product to the market, to the customer.
I'm seeing this more and more, where there's kind of that concept of, for a long time we were going through self-improvement phase. It was how to fix your weaknesses, how to improve where you lack. And what I'm seeing more, at least, you know, from my limited perspective, is more and more a trend in leaning into strengths and then hiring, partnering, or creating other, you know, alternative ways to balance your weakness that are through people who maybe who have the strength that, you know, balances or compensates for your weakness. Does the data support that? Is that the trend that you guys support?
Absolutely. The data supports that. Not only, of course, our own studies, but there are other studies. For instance, I'm going to talk about one that was just recently done by World Bank. It's a random control trial study that was rolled out in an African nation, they worked with about, I think, 1,500 or so entrepreneurs. And what the study was about is that when you factor in the psychology of the individual, the builder or the entrepreneur, into the training and development, it leads to superior outcomes. So they had two groups. One group received the psychological training. The study group received the psychological pieces. And the control group received the traditional business training, you know, around marketing and how to get customers and what your sales funnel should be like, etc. And they realized, the findings were that the study group, which received the psychological training, their profits went up by 30% from the base measurement, compared to only 11% for the group that received traditional business training. So to go back to that earlier point then, of the point you made about, you know, we were always, or for the most part of our history, we've been focused on, let's fix our weaknesses. If you don't know this, go take a class, go take a coaching course, and then suddenly you're magically going to become better at that. I think the more psychological approach that we are vested in and we take, as well as, you know, some of these other studies are showing that people are beginning to realize that, is that if you work with your strengths, if you work with things that you're innately more tuned to, you're going to then see a much better outcome if you leverage those, if you develop those. And that psychological piece leads to better business outcomes also.
Now, I know this really isn't the focus of your book, but are you seeing an evolution in education? You know, I know that you are a faculty member and, you know, you work at, you know, high level universities. Where are you seeing these kind of changes where people are recognizing, hey, we shouldn't necessarily teach or educate all students the same way?
I think it is beginning to happen. There are some educational institutions that are further ahead than others, and that's always the case. But there is a movement where people are realizing that if we identify and develop the talent of our students, we are going to see better livelihoods, better lives for them, more engagement in whatever the student ends up doing as he or she enters a career track or starts something or whatever the case may be. You know, we figured out how to identify and foster intellectual talent, athletic talent. We have these pipelines and we have processes in place and we have selection that happens over time. But we have none of that for the builder piece. We don't have any way of identifying who has this entrepreneurial talent early on, and then how do we take that talent and develop it so that we can see more activity, more ventures being formed, and more the ones that are formed survive longer and sustain themselves much longer and grow. So there are schools and colleges, and we work with many of them, where they are understanding that we need to help these students figure out what is it that they do right, what is it that they naturally get, and how do you then leverage that piece to build on it and to build their potential to do whatever it is that they want to do in life. And so
we're
doing it on the builder side, but that's also being done on the other strength side. So, you know, for entrepreneurs, yes, you can do that, but you can also, it also helps the individual just develop overall if you are working with the strengths of that individual.
So you mentioned something earlier that startups are, have been on a decline for the past four decades. And that's one of those things where my assumption, it sounds like it's much different than the data, right? My assumption was that because of the internet, because of how easy it is, you know, the decrease in barriers to entry of starting a company, I assumed startups were massively on the rise. So what, you know, how, one of the things that you guys talk about is in helping people learn how to recognize opportunities. What do you guys do, you know, what did you find it, and what does the book talk about in terms of really helping people, you know, to, you know, dig deep into their immediate environment and learn how to discover and identify opportunities?
You know, opportunities are everywhere. The likelihood of someone noticing or figuring out what that opportunity is increases tremendously with, of course, the environment knowledge. So you've got to know the environment in which the, whether it's the business environment, the political environment, the social environment, what is it that this environment is like? And what is it that there are some unmet needs in the environment? So the more you know about your environment, the higher the likelihood that you can start seeing opportunities there. There's also a motivation to change something. People who have the innate drive or motivation to change the status quo, whether it is improvements in process that someone can look at, whether there are some developments in regulation or policies that throw up new opportunities in the environment, whether it's technology, developments in technology or industry that can lead to new openings for new unmet needs in the market, or there could be unexpected events or demographic shifts, like, you know, you have a large cohort of population that is on the brink of retirement, and then that creates new opportunities for certain types of businesses that could go and meet that unmet need for that particular demographic group. So understanding and keeping your ear to the ground of what is it that is changing in my environment. And then, of course, the networks of who is it that you're connected to, how does that make a difference in terms of your ability to tap into the right people to then make sure that the opportunities that you recognize can be fructified as a product or a service. You can make something out of it. So selecting that right idea to pursue may be probably the most important choice someone makes as an entrepreneur. And you need to be open to that, which means that knowledge of environment has to be there. And you need to then validate that idea or that opportunity through a process, which we've explained in the book, of vetting that idea and making sure that this is an idea that can be turned into something that a customer would want and would pay for.
Right. So because vetting the idea is crucial, since I know many entrepreneurs who have wonderful ideas but have never taken any action on that idea. So they don't know if the marketplace agrees with the concept or with the idea or with the minimal, or, you know, or with the product at all. And so you guys talk about activating the idea and creating that minimum viable solution, which I very much agree means finding your first customer, somebody who's actually not going to, not a focus group, not someone who's going to say, oh, you know, not a friend who would say, hey, that's a great idea, but someone who's actually going to vote on the idea with their wallet. What do you guys cover with that? How does that work in the book?
So You're absolutely right. I think we call them the early adopters. So when you put your, the first step, of course, is to get your idea to some kind of a prototype or to a minimum viable product, as it's also called.
Right.
Some form that your idea is taken that a customer can actually use. You know, you hand it to the customer and the customer starts using that as it is intended to be used. So those early adopters are critically important in terms of the development of the product. You learn a lot from the customer feedback. You can repeat and refine until that product then meets the customer expectations. And the book goes through that process of hypothesizing, experimenting, measuring outcomes, which is a critical piece in my opinion, and then learning from that, from the outcomes, and then moving on to the hypotheses, the second set of hypotheses, and you go through this iterative, given the back and forth with the your first early adopters until you have a product that then can meet the market needs. Now, what it does is in through this process of if you work with the customer, if you don't do the focus groups or just talk to venture capitalists and see if all that is going to work, you're making a lot of assumptions there that might not be true at that point. But when you work with customers, you're already creating a base of people who now know your trajectory, the trajectory your product has taken, your company's taken, and you've kind of sold them on the idea that this is something that is useful to them. And you've also built something that it fits their needs or needs of others just like them. And so through this process of experimentation and measuring your outcomes, you can create something that's viable and that the customers are willing to pay for, because that's the key to making something sustainable.
Absolutely. What are some tips that you would give to someone who's kind of in that point where they've got some good awareness, they know what their strengths are, but they're looking, and maybe they even have that first idea. Like what would you recommend as how to get that real actionable data quickly of whether or not the product is viable? You know, how do we take this from theory to action?
Right. I think, there are examples, for instance, here of a real entrepreneur who went from zero and then exited out at 50 million. So there are examples of that. But the first would be you draw up some hypotheses. So when you have an idea that you've been tooling around with and you've done your due diligence on that idea through an exercise that we call the storyboarding, where you ask yourself all the questions about what is the opportunity, what is the purpose that I'm after here, what is my product or service, what does the customer need? And at that point, these are all assumptions in your head. You're answering these questions for yourself. What are the resources that are available to me? What is the affordable loss? What is it that I'm willing to lose to develop this idea? And then what does success look like? So once you've identified all those answers to those questions, then that means that you are now ready to activate on the idea. And activating on the idea means that you, first of all, are going to generate some hypotheses. So the hypotheses, for instance, of a company that is an idea of helping families pay for their in-home caregivers legally were things like families who hire in-home caregivers want to pay their caregivers legally. That's an assumption. It's a hypothesis that you have to go out in the market and ask people, are they even ready to do that? Another hypothesis for this particular entrepreneur was that relationship-based marketing and sales is my best customer acquisition strategy. So going to daycare providers, going to nanny providers and asking them that, could you help me market what I'm trying to sell here so that people can actually legally pay their caregivers would be the best strategy to reach the customer base that she's trying to reach, the entrepreneur is trying to reach. So you set certain assumptions down on what is it that you're trying to do. And then you get out of your office or your home and actually pound the pavement to go and talk to people. You talk to potential customers. You'd try to put in front of them the minimum viable product that you've created and see if you get any bites. You try to leverage your networks to find your first customer and see if that customer would be willing to look at your product. And a lot of times, I think that has to be done by offering free services at the beginning with an intent that you are going to convert that person into a customer, because then he or she can see the value that you're offering. So the book goes through what is it that I need to do to find my first customer, using your experience, using your networks. Once you identify the set of customers who are willing to give your MVP a try, then you start checking off your hypotheses of what worked or what didn't work. In some cases, the assumptions that you had made at the beginning of the process will work out and you will see positive results. And in other cases, those assumptions would be false and would not give you the results you want. And then at that point, you have to decide, okay, well, this didn't work. Let me move on to hypothesizing again, putting another assumption in front of you and then going and testing that. And as you collect data, make sure your outcomes are very well defined. And as you collect that data, you start understanding what is working and what isn't working and changing your product or service at the same time. That measuring outcome piece, I cannot say enough or cannot repeat enough of how important that is. And then once you have that, then you are at a stage where you have a little base of customers. You know where or how, to what degree your product is ready for the market and whether you need to continue down the same route or you need to pivot at that point and move in another direction or make minor changes. Whatever the case may be, make sure that it is coming, the learnings from that is coming from those, the measurement of the outcomes. That are tied to each hypothesis that you set for yourself.
And yeah, then don't forget I think I could have an entire conversation just on what you talked about on storyboarding. I think many entrepreneurs skip that part of and asking themselves those really important questions. And I think as we talk, I'm realizing just how important this book, Born to Build, is going to be to really anybody who either wants to start, you know, their own startup or really thrive within any organization, because it really highlights things that are important. Because I think you guys are right that even as an employee, everyone needs to start looking at themselves as more of a builder. So Sangeeta, I'm going to ask you, what are you building?
You know, the last about 7 years, I have been involved in building this little startup within the Gallup organization. It started with a seed of an idea. We built an assessment to measure the potential of an individual to the entrepreneurial activity, how successful someone can be in the entrepreneurial space. In building that assessment, we realized that there are certain behaviors that highly successful entrepreneurs exhibit on a very consistent basis. That is what makes them successful. So then how do you take those behaviors and put a scientific rigor to it, put a measure behind it so that we can then identify people who have similar behaviors on those dimensions? And we have identified 10 dimensions, which are almost like tasks that have to be done in a business. So from that assessment, and then understanding if our mission is to really unlock the exponential power of the human potential, in this case, in the arena of entrepreneurship, then how do you get that to market? So building an assessment, or which is like, consider this as a product, right? So that's one part of it. But then you can, I'm sure, count innumerable examples where there are great products and services that are developed in corporations which never really see the light of the day. They never reach the customer. So a big part of building something is not just innovation. So innovation is when you come up with that idea, which then turns into maybe your prototype. That's that innovation. But then you need another person or someone with the talent who can then navigate all the politically infested waters of the corporation, the focus of the corporation on the core areas of their business, the fight for the competitive access to the resources. So what we've been doing the last 7 years, it's me with a small team of really talented people. We are basically building that within Gallup. We are trying to figure out what is the best way to get this to customer. And also a big part is identifying who really your customers are, how many different segments there are out there that you would like to get this product or service in the hands of, and then who's willing to pay for it, and what is it and why are they willing to pay for it? What do they get out of it? What is the value proposition that you bring to the table? And that's what's consumed us for the last few years. That's what we are building.
That's awesome. I'm loving it. I think more entrepreneurs and more startups need to start thinking about these principles and really focusing on the data and really treating their business much more like a scientist, right? They need to be, really look at, have a hypothesis, test it, come back and analyze the results. And I think the faster that entrepreneurs do that, the faster they're going to be able to move into the parts of the business they probably want to focus on in the first place. I really appreciate you sharing this. I highly encourage everyone to check out Born to Build from Gallup with Jim Clifton and Sangeeta Bottle. And I appreciate you coming out. And I always ask this question, and I think it's important because we do all of these wonderful things. We do work and business and all the, and we build. But to me, it's all about creating a lifestyle. So I always ask, what's one personal item on your bucket list that you're going to do in the next 12 months?
I think I have a long list. And it's never ending because, you get through one and then there are 10 more that are added.
Right.
But I really want to understand what drives business success as far down as I can go. And I don't think it's a 12-month thing. I think it's a lifetime, multiple lifetimes worth of work that probably will need to be done because there are just so many aspects of what affects business success or failure.
Right. So
my immediate is going into a conference on biology and entrepreneurship and understanding what within us really drives the business outcomes. What is it in our biology that helps us understand that one facet that would lead to failure or success among the million other facets that affect that entity, which is the business.
Wow, that's fascinating. Well, I really appreciate coming out and visiting with me about this. I think it's been, it's really motivated me to learn more about my strengths and focus on the ways that I, as an entrepreneur, can apply the principles that we talked about to really step into my zone of genius and lean into that. So I appreciate the conversation and sharing with us. Again, encourage everyone to check out Born to Build. And now it's your turn to go out and do something.
Thank you for listening to Biz Ninja Entrepreneur Radio with Tyler Jorgensen. Please make sure to subscribe so you're first to hear new interviews and episodes. If you found this podcast to be valuable, please share it with a friend. Don't forget to visit our online dojo at bizninja.com to claim your reward for listening to the show.